see this table here? I tipped this whole table over full of food before. You don't need this, kid. You can still win the national championships. And I told the AD that, yeah, you're right. But this kid needs wrestling for his life. There was a note on my locker that said, Coach, I'm not going to wrestle in the Big Tens. Don't look for me. You won't find me. And I used Sherlock Holmes' theory. Do you think he was going to say no to me?
Did you make Brad Smith run 10 miles every week? During
15.
No, stop.
I would only tell the 10. And it was after practice, though.
That's more than a half marathon, and it's winter in Iowa.
Hey, you get to a point where you can just go.
Dan Gable, thank you so much for letting me into your beautiful home here in Iowa City, and thank you so much for coming on to the Paul Garcia Show. It is truly an honor to have you, and I really mean that, so thank you for your time.
Well, we're just starting, so hopefully we'll make really good use of this time and make a really good show.
Heck yeah, man, and I'll be honest with you, I'm pretty darn excited about this, more excited than perhaps any other interview I've done, and that's no offense to the remarkable people I've talked to, but since day one of this podcast, believe it or not, and I haven't told you this yet, but I have said that one day, by episode 100, I will have Dan Gable on this show. Now, I didn't think that I'd be in your house filming it just like we're doing right now, but it's a little surreal to be talking to you, and to go a little further, and I didn't know if I was going to say this, but you have served an incredibly important role in my life. When I was coming of age, 11, 12, 13, parents just split up, and I was really on my own a little bit. And I am just so blessed that instead of turning to drugs or turning into the wrong crowd, I spent my time on YouTube listening to you, watching these Iowa practices, and the thing that I thought was cool at this pivotal time in my life was Dan Gable, was Iowa wrestling, was that mentality. And doggone it, you could almost say that saved me. You've probably had the biggest impact on my life in my younger years, outside of my father, my great father, and my great brothers. It was you, and I never even met you. So from the bottom of my heart, man, thanks.
Wow, that's a good start right there. I mean, you're winning me over, but more than that, it's impressive what you just said, and that's why I keep talking. That's why I keep busy. That's why I fly to someplace shortly away to give some more speeches. When I get input like what you just gave me, that really inspires me too. So that's unbelievable. Plus, I knew that there was something a little special about this because your dad came along with you here. And, if your dad wants to spend 3, 4, 5, 6 hours in a car and then he has to wait around for 3 or 4 hours, that means that your dad's pretty impressed too. So I knew that this would be a special conversation.
Man, well, like I said, it's surreal hearing you say this stuff, and this is awesome, and thank you for the kind words. And you know what? My dad's pretty darn pumped to see you as well. He's looked up to you for a while. He's, when he was just a little kid, you were doing all the amazing things in your own career. You were winning the gold medal without getting a point scored on you. You were ending your college career with just that one loss, in your high school career, no losses, and all that incredible stuff. So he kind of demanded that he come with, and I happily let him come along. So,
well, and what's interesting is that people know that about me, being an undefeated high school state champion 3 times and 3 out of 3, and then going to college, and you only have 3 years eligibility, and you make the national finals, and you win all your matches there up to the final match. People know all that, but what people really don't understand about me sometimes is that my coaching actually meant more to me than my actual wrestling. I mean, maybe I wouldn't say that had I not won so much and not had so much success, but it's like you're dealing with something within your control. And I like to be able to control my own destiny through hard work and smart work and whatever that type of things are. But I'll tell you, when you become a coach, and when you become a father, when you become married, you know, and you know, it's, there's a lot of stuff that it's not as easy anymore because it's somebody else. When it's somebody else, you can't keep your finger on those people 24 hours a day. And if you do, you're just going to be worn out and you're just going to be defeating the purpose of trying to let somebody grow up. So there's so many times that people ask me, like, what's better, winning as an athlete or coaching? You know, I just knew I was going to win because I was just felt that good. And once I started winning a lot, I got that confidence. But as a coach, every time you go out there, you just don't have that control, that hand on. You depends on everything that you do to prepare that kid. And that's really important. So that's what motivates me to make sure that when that kid's out there, he has the ability to do what you want him to do. And it's just not the same. And because it's not the same, it can be very much more rewarding. And so when somebody asked me what means more, I think means more to me to coach somebody to win as compared to if you know you're going to win.
Right, right, absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? I want to jump right into coaching in just a sec, but I would really regret it if I didn't bring up a few things. So in the past couple years alone, Dan, you have been on the Joe Rogan Experience, the number one, the biggest podcast in the world. I mean, my goodness, it's one of the most popular media outlets in general on planet Earth. You were on there. I mean, the episode's gotten millions of views, millions of downloads. It's incredible. And then in addition to that, you've also been in the White House, in the Oval Office, receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom, straight from President Trump, who you told would not stand a chance against you in a wrestling match, and the wrestling community loved it. But, and you've also been on other shows, like I was talking about the Lex Friedman podcast. That guy is incredible, and he was here in your house as well, and it's an honor to share the same space as he did. But my question is it surreal at all for you to just get so much attention, to never have the spotlight kind of drift away from you fully?
It's just natural. I feel like that there's more things that's out there. And if I don't explore or even go beyond, and if I don't take that on and want to make that accomplishment, then I'm a kind of a fool. Because I think there's so much good effect that you are having because of all the feedback. You know, you got the W's. You don't want the L's. Mm-hmm. You want the wins. You don't want the losses. But, you know, there's going to be some there. But more than that, when you affect people, and like you said, that these people that I'm associated with, people are following them, and they're going to affect them in a way. And if you affect them in a positive way, that is so important. You know, I just don't know, you know, if there's people out there, as many as there should be, that are affecting people in positive ways, because we're such in, you know, we're just kind of like a country that's lacking discipline, and it's like a family that's broken in two, and it's hard to figure out how it's going to get back. So the more times that you can affect people positively, that they can do good things, that they can actually get these crazy things out of them that they think is good, if they're crazy, mm-hmm. The best. I mean, it's more work that doesn't really have to be accomplished. Every time there's something that doesn't go right, you got to fix it. And there shouldn't be as many things going wrong or in a different direction when you have 10 people walking down the street and five people are arguing. You know, it should be 9-1, 8-2. I mean, it's 10-0 if it's right. I don't really understand why it's so hard to pick directions if they're good directions. And again, when you give me a positive feedback, that means a lot to me. Because if I don't get a positive feedback, then I start correcting that as good as I can. So when I had a loss after 181 matches to Larry Owings, that minute I got beat, things were starting to click, to turn around, to focus. I went about my own business, and it just kind of happened naturally because that's always the way I've been in my life. When you have a good focus on something, you know, you're thinking about it a lot. Mm. Even though I had a lot of wins, I was still thinking about it. And, you know, how to get better, how to make sure I, you know, if I beat this kid by a certain amount, how can I not, you know, win by more? You know, that instead of just relying on the same old tactics. So you're always getting better. But sometimes you fall into a little like, okay, I'm doing okay. Or I'm just going about it the same way. You got to come up with some new things. So sometimes you got to get hit really hard to really make a move. And so, you know, when I got hit in my last match in college in a loss, that hit me really hard. I don't think it hit as hard. It didn't hit me as hard as probably 7 years earlier when I had a sister get murdered. But because, you know, you just can't compare the two. One's athletics and one's life and death. But, you know, it's still, you go back and you analyze and you find out that there's reasons that there's reasons like right now that America's divided. There's reasons why I lost to Larry Owings. There's reasons why my sister got murdered, you know. And, you know, you come up with those and then you go about them in a way to help the future. So the loss, the death, you know, things don't happen like that because those are the things that set you back. But you can't just let them set you back and never come back. You got to kind of have a comeback every time.
Right. Well, you know, I did my research on you. Bob Richards was a pole vaulter from Champaign, Illinois, which is very near to where I am, right? In Normal, Illinois. He Olympic gold medalist, two-time gold medalist. He spoke at your high school when you were a sophomore, I believe. And he's a minister also, but he said some really profound things. And from what I understand, he had a pretty profound impact on you. And one of the things he says is, if I can remember it right, to become a champion, basically, you need to get hurt. Behind every champion is at some point that champion got hurt. It's the hurt that makes the champion. Do you think that's true for you? And do you think that's true for most people, would you say?
Well, it's exactly true for me because I didn't realize Bob Richards was where he was from.
Oh, yeah, right next door to Normal, Illinois.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that. I mean, I probably knew it back in the day, but, you know, that's 1964. When I bought his book, The Heart of a Champion, at an assembly at West Waterloo High School. And when I bought that book, it was spring of 64. Or, you know, it could have been sometime in that time period.
Yeah, minor details.
You know, but I bought that book from him. When he spoke, I really liked what he said. And, you know, it relates to performance in athletics, but it also relates to him being a minister and a way of life. And that way of life is a good way of life. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I didn't know I was buying it that would help save me a little bit and help keep me on the right path and help lead me. But I realized after, you know, many, many years when the book pages fell apart, that I was studying the book and I was reading the book and it was all underlined and emphasized. And it couldn't have came at a more proper time because of I had a sister that was murdered. And this book was the answer for me. It was the answer for me to move forward, especially with a family that was devastated, a mom and a dad, and had two kids. Diane was her name, and she was 4 years older than me. But she actually had moved back home, and because she went to college and she it was flight school, I believe, and not flight school, but stewardess school, and it was up in Minneapolis area. And so she had come back home, and my dad had hired her to now because she didn't really like what she was doing there up in Minneapolis. And so she came back home, lived at home, and she was going to help run my dad's office. So
real estate business,
right? Real estate business, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so my mom kind of helped at home, and my sister helped at the office. And so she was 19 years old, but all of a sudden, the mom and dad are. We like to go up to Northeast Iowa, about a 100-mile trip to go fishing. We'd rent this cabin, and so, and we would. They were pretty. They looked after myself and her pretty well, but she was 19, and so she had a boyfriend, and so when we went up to the cabin on a Friday night in the spring, in the end of May. She could drive herself up the next day because she wanted to stay to socialize with some friends that night. Mm-hmm. And so it was no big deal. I mean, what happened was just the big deal was that the house got broken in after she went to bed, and one of our neighbor boys was in there and came in, and he had already been there and he had left. But then when the house was locked down, he broke in the back door and went after my sister, and wow, she fought for her life. I think she probably could have saved her life. You know, I think he was probably just after her, you know, and he was quite a bit younger, and she'd already had a boyfriend, and she was pretty, you know, been raised pretty good. So she didn't give in, and he killed her, you know, and so... You know, it was one of these things that, you know, I'd already got this book and I'd been reading it. And, he was a minister. Bob Richards was a minister. So I was reading a lot about faith, even though that we had already been going to church for my whole life. Not every weekend, but, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, we're believers, strong believers. But, you know, it was not like we had a lot of room to gain, you know, a lot more. And so this book was just all about being a top-notch person in the Christian ways, mm-hmm. and all about performing in athletics at Olympic Games style, you know. And so it was like, whoa, it really came at a good time because I needed that faith, that strong faith and belief, and to help my parents because, you know, they— from Waterloo. Waterloo's kind of a crazy town, Rathpacking, John Deere, hardworking people, but, you know, not probably a lot of hard workers that probably went right from work right to the bar, you know, and drank some beer. And my dad's kind of that way every day. He would, as soon as it was 5 o'clock, he wanted to hit the, if he went to wrestling practice, if it was during wrestling season, he'd go there. Then he'd go to a bar. Or he might go to a bar sometimes and come up. And I don't think he did that too much just because I would have noticed. But I think pretty soon, he had a couple friends that went with him to practice, and then they went to the bar. And then they came home for the time I got home. He'd be home at the same time. He probably only stayed at the bar an hour or so. But, you know, it was one of these things. So, you know, that book, that Bob Richards things, you know, and Bob Richards knows me. We've talked. In fact, he said that because of me that he's probably had to reproduce more books in his lifetime just because I used to talk about his...
You did some promotional work for him, yeah.
Yeah, just like right now, you're doing promotional work for me.
Happy to do it too.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. So, you know, it's one of these things. But it's a miracle. It's just what you do, what you believe, how you live your life, and there's certain things that shape it, and that book helped shape my life, especially at a time that was so needed. It's like, okay, I could get off track a little bit, and I go to that book, and I get right back on track. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just one of these things, especially with your kid that's got wide eyes, and you've been wanting to be Mickey Mantle all your life.
Traditional, modern, or rustic, whatever your home interior vision may be, you can count on the professionals here at Gravel Lane Design Studio to make it a reality. From bathrooms and kitchens to laundry rooms and mudrooms, our talented team of designers specializes in custom designs, including Amish-made cabinetry, countertops, showers, closets, and shelving that embody your personal style, creating the space you desire with the function you require.
Based out of Eureka, Illinois, Gravel Lane is a locally owned business that takes pride in providing you with a delightful, family-like experience. Give us a call and we'll pair you with one of our expert designers that will meet with you to discuss your vision. Together, we will view your space and take measurements, explore materials and samples, and look over personalized digital renderings so you can see it for yourself.
And only once you see a design that you truly love will we begin building your dream room.
Turn your home's interior from ordinary to extraordinary when you call Gravel Lane Design at 309-383-0090
or send us a message through our website at gravellanedesign.com.
Gravel Lane Design Studio, quality craftsmanship.
It's... In fact, a lot of people helped me. I mean, you can't believe the town of Waterloo, Iowa.
You were talking about the guy who owned a car shop when we were downstairs, you, me, and my dad, looking around your place, looking in that wrestling room, the 12x12. You told us about the that guy that owned the car dealership, and when you came back in town, maybe from college, he pulled out some cars and put a wrestling mat right down in the middle of his store, and people were coming in looking at cars, and you were there wrestling, who knows, a football team or something. Man, what kind of town must you have lived in that they supported you that much? Yeah. The good old days, that's what I call that, right?
Yeah, his name was Jim Cordes, and he owned Jim Cordes Ford, and he actually had some, you know, he had different dealerships, but one of them was actually in Cedar Falls. Waterloo, Cedar Falls is kind of a town where you step one foot, you're in Waterloo, step another foot, you're in Cedar Falls. That's the home of the University of Northern Iowa, home of Doug Schwab, who coaches that team there.
Just had Josh Alber, one of his recent star guys from Illinois, four-time undefeated state champ, had him on my show literally just a few days ago. We talked all about Doug Schwab, one of the many Gable-trained, incredible coaches right now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But yeah, those days, I could go in my basement in my own home in Waterloo, Iowa, on 2241 Easley, right where my sister was murdered, because we stayed there. We stayed there. And it took me to keep them to stay there. And I moved into my sister's room and took over that room because that wasn't going to work with the family. They were just arguing, fighting, and they just couldn't figure out why they kept staying there. But I just helped them take over by moving into there, and they made my bedroom an office. But my basement had a 12x12. It had some old weights. It had a bicycle, a stationary bicycle. It had a one-man sauna. You know, it had all that stuff down there. You know, I'm the kind of guy that when I had a birthday, this is what I would get, you know. Mm-hmm. And not so always asked for, but my mom and dad kind of liked me doing good, and they always, what was this kid need to be good at? You know, if he's good at wrestling, which it looked like he could be, even though he was a swimmer at the beginning at the YMCA, and he was a football player, baseball player, ran a little track sometimes, but wrestling was always the sport that was the most natural. And it seemed like in a hometown with high school coaches of Bob Siddons, who was winning state championships.
Your wrestling coach in high school, yeah.
Yeah, and then a Dave Natvig at East Waterloo, who were winning championships. And then you had Keith Young at Cedar Falls, and he was a UNI national champion, SCI high, or not high, but college back in the day. And they actually won the United States NCAA championship one year. You know, we had all this wrestling in our area. And my dad was a wrestler, but he wasn't a great wrestler, but his friends were. And so his friends, one of them, at least Don Buzzard, and he had two sons that helped me learn how to wrestle when I was a kid. And so that made a big difference. It was just around me. So I had the 12x12. My dad actually bought that 12x12 from Mr. Buzzard, and it was for $200 at that time. You know, it probably costs a lot more than that right now. But I got that wrestling mat. I think it's rolled up in my shed out there, that rocky shed. But
Where you just broke your heavy bag from beating the crap out of it a little too much.
Yeah, you know, you punch something long enough, you're going to beat them up. But it took a while. It took a couple of years to knock that one down. But I need to string it back up as soon as the temperature gets a little warm. It's a little cold out there yet. I never really get away from what I love.
Dan, I want to ask you, so you're talking about, you know, your sister's death, and I've always thought it was really interesting how you, at such a young age, could bring your family together, and you were just the only child at that point. And you know what? I think you might find this interesting. I remember watching like a documentary on how steel was made, and I think it's just the perfect metaphor for life. It really spoke to me. You rip this crude iron, right? It's all cruddy mix of things. You pull it out of the ground. You throw it into a furnace. You beat the crap out of it. You raise the heat on it. You put it through serious adversity, and as long as it doesn't break and dissolve in the flames, it comes out the other end purified, stronger than ever steel that can be used for building buildings and amazing projects and everything, right? And I just think that is not only a great analogy for living life, if you can meet adversity, more heat, more getting the tar beat out of you, if you can make it through that and not break, the better. And hearing you say that this Bob Richards book really had an impact on you makes me think that, like I said, I've always been surprised how such a young kid could, you know, I'm going to go into my sister's room, I'm going to sleep there, I'm going to bring you guys together. You were being the leader there. And I don't know if anyone knows, and correct me if I'm wrong, that I think your faith, and I think that God had a big role in that. Is that fair to say, your faith?
Absolutely. But, you know, maybe not as strong as what the Petersons did later for me, because they actually preach the gospel and they actually know the gospel. You know, I basically would go and hear enough to understand it and believe in it, but I didn't know it well enough to preach it. And I can remember in the Olympic training camp with these two guys. And so we'd finish our day usually, you know, by 6:30 or so, and we eat dinner, and then we were staying in like a fraternity house on the University of Minnesota's campus, the Olympic team for wrestling. That's where we trained there. And so then all of a sudden I would recover. For some reason, I could recover real fast. So about within an hour and a half after the dinner, when everybody's done for the day, I might need another workout. It might, depending on how I felt. And if I felt good, I wanted one. So I might go out, and they look at me, "You going out some more?" I go, "Yeah, you want to go with me?" "Oh, I think we might have had enough." Right. You know, or if they're feeling good, they might have went out with me. I'm not saying they just went out religious with me, but, you know, they did sometimes need that recovery. Mm-hmm. And we do. But I was just able to recover a lot of times. And when I was recovered, I was ready to go, and I wanted to get a little better.
Great influences, great friends, great men of faith. They did a lot for you, it seems, these two brothers. And it's great to have those guys around, you know. And you guess what? They didn't win state or anything like that. They didn't have a ton of success in college, but they both went on to become Olympic champions. And my goodness, and they credit you a lot for that. And, you know, I want to, before we jump into coaching here, just for the sake of time, you know, I got a lot of things I want to talk to you about. I want to jump back just really quick and talk about, you know, you received what I said in the introduction, you received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President Donald Trump, and you also are on the Joe Rogan Experience. I just want to ask quickly, where does that Presidential Medal of Freedom rank among your many, many awards that I see just all throughout your house here? Where does that rank?
Well, you know, that's a tough question.
Yeah, no right or wrong answers.
No, it's not really a tough question. It's just that I got to think before you answer. I usually, when you wrestle, you don't want to think, because then you're going to get taken down. Right now, you get a chance to think. I would say that Presidential Medal of Freedom, it's called something. It's called the highest honor that a civilian can get.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. I mean, where'd that come from? I mean, what if I'm up for that and I got it? It should mean something. If it's the highest honor, and that's what it says, and it doesn't just say it like with no meaning. That's the meaning of it. That's, and a lot of people Not a lot of people. Other people have gotten it. And but it's something that if you don't think that the highest honor a civilian can get is valuable, then something wrong with you.
Right, yeah.
There's something wrong with you.
Right.
And now, the reason why I'm saying all this is because of the controversy with what goes on in the president's office of the United States of America.
You mean just in general, like with President Trump, the controversy
right.
surrounding
so,
him?
And so when I, all of a sudden, I got the award, there was like notes sent to me that said, you're not really going to accept that honor, are you? Well, they didn't call it an honor. You're not going to accept that award. Well, I wouldn't if it wasn't the highest honor in the United States. I mean, I might accept, you know, other honors as well, but it's like, come on. I mean, you've had to, you're getting it for a reason. And does it matter who the president is? No, it doesn't. You know, that's the way I looked at it.
But to some people, it does.
It does. And so they're looking at it wrong. They're looking at it like, through narrow lenses, through a focus that is so small, it's like a telescope. You know, it's like you're only seeing something that you're not seeing the big picture. And so obviously, my whole family went out for that. I mean, it wasn't even a question. They all wanted to go, and they had a great time. Mm-hmm. I kind of stayed low key. And when I was out there, and I can't exactly remember why, I think it was mostly because there was so much going on, and in the world at that time, even so much controversy, you just want to mind your own business, but you don't want to not act like it was a big deal,
right?
And so yeah, that award. You ask me where it stands. I mean, it's the highest honor. You know, if I can get something, if there's going to be a higher award out there that they say, I'm not going to say Trump's that one, because somebody got mad right now when I said that. Somebody did.
For sure.
But you know what? That's the word, though.
Right, yeah.
That really is the word.
Isn't that crazy what you just said? It's like, I don't want to say the word Trump because so many people get so irate about that.
Yeah.
Something's not right with that, man.
Yeah.
I'm curious to ask, you know, finish your sentence, or maybe answer it now. What are Dan Gable's thoughts and opinions and feelings on President Trump?
Let me tell you, I am fairly narrow-minded. Fairly. I mean, I know a lot about the world, but I know a lot about the sport of wrestling. I know what the award is, but more than that, I even know that Donald Trump wrestled. And I don't know if you know that.
I heard you say that one time. I couldn't find any evidence. Are you sure?
I am absolutely sure.
How do you know?
Because I saw his picture in the school on the wrestling team in that picture. He was a football player at that school. It was a private school, I believe. And he was doing good in football, but not great. And his football coach said, his junior year after football, said, if you go out for wrestling this year, right after football season, I think you'll become a better football player for your senior year. That will help you with some of the skills that you need for football. And so that caused Donald Trump to go out for wrestling. Football did. And then when he went out for wrestling, he didn't do so well, but nobody was at his weight. So there was like...
So he was varsity.
Yeah. And he had never wrestled until this year, and now he only had a couple, 3 weeks practice. And so he was on the team. Well, he was on the team anyway, because he went out, but he made the first team. He didn't do so well. But he does give wrestling credit for helping his what he's doing in his life, but the next football season as well. He was better. And he gave that a lot of credit, even though he said, boy, that was a tough sport to go out for that late, because he just, he counted a lot of light bulbs, he said.
Counted? Oh, that's very funny. Yeah, it sounds like something he would say. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, he said that, but he looked around and he said, you don't need to tell anybody that. But, you know, that's the way wrestling is. You know, if it helps you, which it helped him. But what really, so he only did it for one season. But because he did it for one season, you know, a guy like me who was a little bit, I think, younger than him, he followed me, you know, because he had this connection when he was back in younger years. And then when he ended up getting married and he had Donald Jr., Donald Jr. is really the kid that really got him into the sport. Not got him into it, kept him into it, because Donald Jr. wrestled for 9 years.
Did he really?
Yes.
Wow. Man, you know what? People might not like it, but that makes me respect the guy a heck of a lot more. Donald Jr. wrestled 9 years, huh?
That's my recollection. 9. Could have been 7, but I think it was 9. But
wow.
But it could have been, you know, just maybe junior high and high school.
So did the fact that Donald Trump did wrestle in high school, in all honesty, did that kind of win your vote a little bit?
Oh, I think I'm the not fact asking that he you. Was president of the United States won my right. vote right. and went the award one. But because he wrestled, that made my eyes kind of like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt like I wasn't going to listen to the criticism. This is what I'm going for. You know, it's something it's an honor.
It seems like that type of guy it vibes with you a lot more than, you know, other candidates would have. Someone who's blunt, someone who says tough things, someone who yanks people in with their handshake. You know, he's definitely the tough guy when it comes to those candidates. So I'm not at all surprised that, you know, you at least partially liked him.
Surprisingly, I've been associated with quite a few of the presidents at one time or another. Mm. I was on a committee, for another president, and I was, you know, and I, you know, I met probably quite a few of them. I mean, Ford, Clinton, you know, I've met, you know, a lot more. So it's one of these things that you have to respect them. And at that time when I knew them, I probably didn't know whether they were Democratic or Republican, because I just didn't pay any attention. Mm-hmm. It didn't mean that much to me. I mean, just he's the president. He's not, I don't know, you know, who he is. Well, it doesn't matter what he is on his party. So
right. And, you know, also I touched on in the beginning of this, Joe Rogan Experience, biggest podcast in the world. What was that experience like? What are your thoughts on Joe and his show, you know?
Well, people like found out I was going to go on this show. And they were all like trying to scare me or something, because they were making a big deal, kind of like what you are making right now.
I apologize.
No, you're good. I like it because that helps me. I don't get scared. I don't get like, oh my gosh. I mean, I don't know who would have to walk in here right now to like make me go like, whoa. I can't believe you're here. I'm just happy my wife's going to walk in, you know, and I'll be more impressed with her walking in than I would be with somebody that's got a stature, you know. I mean, right now, if Putin walked in, I'd probably raise my eyebrows, but not totally, because even Putin has some connection with me just because of the fact of Russia and wrestling. Right. And I know he's not a wrestling guy, but he has wrestlers work for him at times. And, you know, it's just hard to believe that a guy like him could let things go on like they're going on right now without saying, this shouldn't go on like this. This shouldn't happen like this. This is not the way to live. There's got to be a better way. And I, you know, especially with the guy that was in sport, he was in sport,
right?
And he backed sport. So, you know, it's just, I don't know where some people's brains are or thoughts are.
I mean, there's no elections there in Russia, so that probably contributes to it. The guy can stay in office as long as he wants, really.
Yeah, but it's a big country. There's a lot of people, and they're unbelievable in wrestling, you know, and they vowed to beat me, the whole country.
That's right.
You know, they stood up, and they shouldn't have. Larry Owings did a sneak attack on me. He said the day before the NCAAs, I'm here to beat Dan Gable. The Russians, 5 to 6 months ahead of time, says we're going to find somebody to beat Dan Gable. Larry Owings was a lot smarter. He didn't give me a chance to react. In fact, he gave me just a chance to kind of get nervous or just like look around and what he distracted me. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Russians, when they vowed to beat me, it was like they put me on notice. And I'd already been through Owings, and so it wasn't like, I was going to let it distract me. It was going to actually help me, especially when I had a period of time to deal with it.
Right.
So, that was their mistake, and that's a coaching mistake, simply. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you really want to not motivate the other guy.
Right.
Because, you know, the worst thing you can do is motivate somebody.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell them that, hey, I'm going to beat this guy. We're going to find someone.
Unless you're doing it right at the last second.
Right.
And which then you kind of wonder what's wrong with this guy.
Owens did that in the newspaper, didn't he? I'm going to beat Dan Gable. And you're like, whoa.
He says, I'm here to beat Dan Gable. Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. Wow. And okay, so Vladimir Putin
was on Wednesday of the tournament, and the tournament started Thursday.
Oh man,
it was in the Chicago Tribune.
You probably never heard anyone say that before. No, you heard it a couple times though before in your career,
maybe, but not like that. Right. Not in headlines in the Chicago Tribune.
Hmm. Well, okay, so real quick, Vladimir Putin walks in the door. That's what's making you say whoa. He'll make you say whoa, but usually not many people. But anyway, so Joe Rogan apparently you weren't too nervous for that, but what was that all like?
Oh, I was, the reason why I wasn't nervous about it, but I was impressed. And anytime I can do something for the world, for my sport, for family, for something good, I want to do it.
Since 1950, Dave's Supermarket in Fairbury has been wowing customers throughout Central Illinois with their unmatched customer service, delectable deli market, beloved grocery carryout service, and many other fortes, which is why they've earned hundreds of five-star reviews online. Dave's Third Street Deli has plenty of seating and is a destination place to meet your family and friends for good food, fun, and fellowship. Not only is their homestyle fried chicken here the best around, but you can also enjoy free coffee and 50-cent ice cream every single day. And be sure to check out their Old World Bakery while you're here, where freshly baked goods are prepared every morning. You'll find hundreds of unique and signature items here at Dave's that you won't find anywhere else, like their famous potato salad, ham loaf, and canned meats, just to name a few. Come experience this revered location that puts a super in supermarket when you shop at Dave's in Fairbury, Illinois. Wowing the customer for over 70 years.
Something good. I want to do it. And if you can do it in terms of quickness, and that's a way to do it. I mean, it's like what we're doing right now. I mean, you said that, you know, you have some followers, you know, and people are going to be listening to it. And that's what I'm talking to them. I have this poster. I'm calling you out. You know, I'm calling you out. And this poster really is every day when you get up, if you see this poster, you know, it's like, hey, I can't stay home today. I can't just sit in front of the TV all day. Yeah, I want to get educated a little bit, you know, if I can believe it. But, you know, but I really, what I want to do is I want to make a difference, and I want to get something accomplished, and I want to do well for me, my family, for the United States, for the world. And, you know, that's why that poster that I made up there, there's unbelievable amount of meaning But but to everybody that looks at that poster, that's me calling you out to get your butt going to get some accomplishments.
Oh, yeah. Man. You know, I'm largely cut from the same cloth as you because you had such an impact on me when I was coming of age. So what you're saying right now, I'm having to fight back the fire that's bubbling up inside me right now. And you're absolutely right. Like, hey, get your butt moving. It's not a bad thing to work super hard these days. People are like, you know, self-love, you know, take a break, you know. Quite the contrary, I believe a lot more people need to get kicked in the butt a little bit. And it seems like you believe that you have an obligation to utilize your skills and the legacy that you have for good. It seems like you just want to take all your skills, all the things you've done, and do maximum good, and you think you have an obligation to do that.
That's true. That is true. And it's probably happened from the beginning of my life, just because of the way my parents were helping me get motivation, or putting me in charge, not me in charge, but them in charge of me, the YMCA, for an example, you know, Young Men's Christian Association. But, you know, it's like more than that, you know, it goes beyond that. You know, when my sister got murdered, I got tipped off before, just a couple weeks before. I was walking to school with the guy, with the kid, and he said some things that were not like, "Whoa, what, why are you saying that?" You know, and I just let it go in my ear and out, and I didn't say anything. And so to this day, communication is big to me. And this is communication right here. It's what we're doing. And so I don't turn too many good things down that I think can help people, because I could have probably prevented my sister's death. But because I didn't, I'm going to honor her the rest of my life and hope to be able to preach to other people that they can do the same thing and prevent. But when it isn't prevented, because you can't stop everything.
Right.
I mean, there's car wrecks every day. There's this, there's that. I mean, you know, Putin shooting people up, you know, it's just one of these things. But if you can do things that people will think a little bit before they do, not in wrestling matches, because you can't think, because otherwise the guy's got you. But off the mat, if you can think in practices, but you know, it's one of these things that when you have something on your mind and you don't spread that will or that goodwill, bad will, that information, it can go bad on you. And you got to live with it forever.
Right, 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 right. If you know something important, you believe something that's important to say, just you better freaking say it. You have an obligation. There's a reason, right, that it's that you have this desire to say it. So don't let your fear of maybe public speaking keep you from saying something that could really benefit the world. And you're right. That's what we're doing right here. That's why I'm talking to Dan Gable. That's why I'm not editing anything out of this conversation, is because this is how those beautiful, important thoughts come to the surface. It's extremely important what we're doing right now. And, you know, first of all, you were going to say something, I think, and no, I kind of jumped in here.
I'm going to just lead off what you're saying there, because there's some people that are just holding it against you and me because of their beliefs just in government, for an example, you know, and that's not right. That's not right, because I don't know what we're saying that's wrong for anybody.
Right.
Wrong for anybody. If we're saying something wrong for somebody, then we should have our hands slapped a little bit. But inspiration, motivation, doing good things, you know, having faith, working hard, raising good kids, looking out for them. It doesn't get any better than that. So apparently a lot of people haven't felt that. And because they haven't felt that, they don't know how to do and accomplish that, or they are mad. And because they're mad, they're not going to help anybody else.
Right. Right.
That's,
you know,
that's all I can think of.
I was debating saying this just a second ago, but, and I hope it goes over well, but I hear your story, and it's tragic about your sister Diane and her murder. It's really terrible. And you know, things happen. We have free will, right? Someone chose to do an extreme evil right there, and Diane didn't choose. She fought, in fact. She fought for her life. She fought with all her life.
She gave up her life.
She gave up her life.
Yep.
But part of me sees this when you really zoom out far. Look, you wouldn't have probably gone on to create the legacy and have the impact on the world, the immense good impact on the world and kids like me, and boy, am I thankful for the impact you had on me. You probably wouldn't have done that if this terrible thing didn't come up, if Bob Richards didn't come and put this thought into your head and how to deal with this, if all these things didn't come together in the way they did. You really, her death, as tragic as it was, really, look what came out of that. This incredible impact on the world. And I hope I'm not saying things that you just don't, you totally disagree with, but I know for a fact she's got to be incredibly happy with what you did. And
she was there. She's there in the poster. And she, you know, she's in heaven, you know, but you know, she was one of these things. It was one of these things that it was a real picture for me. I when I was getting the gold medal in Munich, all of a sudden she was there. I mean, I saw her.
You saw her.
I saw her
physically there, like
not in with the crowd, but up in the air. I saw her.
Just for sake of understanding, you mean you really saw her?
Like, yeah, I
you
saw her. And it startled. Yeah, she was there.
Maybe. Wow.
She was hanging there in the air. Yeah, it's just
really,
yeah. And just for a short period of time. You know, that's how much, you know, whether it's real or whether it's imagination, what, you know, it's like, it's crazy, you know, but you know, that's it, you know. I remember one other time in my life that was really stands out. And it was when I was a kid water skiing. I've told this story too. And for some reason, the rope got wrapped around my leg and my dad took off because he wanted to come up and come back around me to give me the handle. But I didn't know the rope was wrapped around. So he floored the boat and I didn't have the skis on yet. And so the rope was wrapped around my leg, and I was going underwater. And I'm a kid. I mean, I'm probably 8, 9 years old. And and there were some other people in the boat, so they realized. They looked back, and they saw the skis. They didn't see me. And so after maybe 8, 10 seconds, 12 seconds, 15 seconds, somebody said to him, "Stop the boat." And so they stopped. He, you know, slowed it down, and I come floating up. And so I remember being underwater, getting pulled. And I remember, like, things happening with God and in heaven. I remember. So it's like you're close to death, but you're not dead. And so it's kind of like that experience to me with a kid. And then they had to take me to the hospital after that because I had rope burns, and it wasn't, you know, and I wasn't near death or anything, but maybe another 10 seconds it might have been. But it was like when I was on that stand getting when the national anthem was playing, you know, it was like she was right there. You know, it's just, it's amazing. I don't know.
It is amazing.
You know? I mean, it's just things happen for a reason. You know?
Talk about the importance of having some positive feedback to let you know when you're doing the right thing. How's that for positive feedback? That had
exactly.
Just feel amazing.
Yeah. So that's why I'm trying to say, you know, when things don't go right, there's ways to help make them better. And my whole life is been like that. I mean, I'm sure that it's not going to end now with that. And so what's really amazing too about this is that, you know, I didn't communicate Guy went to jail. He broke out of jail. Then he went back to jail. But, you know, when he walked out of the courtroom, when I was in high school, that summer, because I went to court, he pointed his finger at the Gable family and said, "I'm going to kill y'all." I think it was just when he thought maybe he could get off, or at least a lesser sentence, because he was only 16. And he got life imprisonment with no parole. Even though they sent him to a different prison for the first couple of years. But, you know, but he broke out later on. But what's really unbelievable for me is that I had a really hard time ever. My dad would never upset my mom probably would never upset a good word about this kid. And I really never did. But all of a sudden, I get a call from a warden or somebody from a penitentiary. And he told me that he said he died of a heart attack. And when he said that, you know, it's like it stopped me, you know, like, whoa, I really couldn't talk much. And the guy said, "I really wanted to tell you this because I've been following you in my life." And he says, "But what I really wanted to tell you was he had been seeing a counselor, or he'd been seeing somebody that talks to him in his later years. And this person told me that he regretted what he did, that if he had to do it all over again, he would not have went that route. He said to the guy that, you know, this girl, Diane Gable, was a really nice girl, and I should have never did what I did to her." And that was the first time that ever came out of his mouth from anybody ever telling me that, hearing it. You know, the last thing I remember seeing him, you know, even though he escaped, but they caught him, but about a month later, 3 weeks.
That had to be a nerve-wracking time.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, it was like him pointing his finger at me or the family and saying they were going to get us. So, you know, it's just, and the reason why I'm telling you this is because it's hard to forgive somebody, but I think I have forgiven him.
Good for you. Good for you, man. That's incredible. And that's powerful. To forgive someone who did that to you is, I mean, well, for one, why hold on to it though? You know, it's just weighing you down, and that's incredible, man. How's that feel?
Well, I just wish my mom and dad were alive, you know, to have that feeling. And you know what? They know too. But they just not in this flesh, you know.
Right.
So, and I think I don't know, you know, I know my mom and dad are pretty tough, but I have a feeling that they're a little bit like me too. So, you know, they probably felt better too.
That's incredible. Wow, what a story. What great things can come from such terrible things in a way, you know? And you're never glad they happen by any means like that. Nothing like that. But it's just incredible. When you meet adversity with grace, holy smokes, look out. You can do some world changing. And that's exactly what you've done.
Well, it doesn't have to be to that in depth. You know, it's like Larry Owings. I mean, when he beat me, it was like I can figure out things and come back and be better prepared to not lose a match, especially if it's a match that you think you should have won, you know, and that type of stuff. So I feel like with that loss there too, I gained a lot of knowledge to be able to finish matches, to be able to change my stance, to be able to do things in my wrestling that made me a lot better wrestler after that. And so it wasn't going to be like a referee's call going to determine who wins the match. I'm going to determine who wins the match.
That's right. That's right. And it's that wrestler mindset that, again, you've largely instilled in me that's led me to be entrepreneurial, right? And I think it's just been so valuable in business. You know, it's like I take all the win, I take all the loss. It's all on me.
You brought up a kid named Chad Zapadil, who was one of my favorite wrestlers. But, you know, he was a three-time NCAA finalist, and he lost in his three last matches. But when you came in here today and you started talking to me a little bit about your wrestling, I asked you about your wrestling, and you went to the state championships four times and at Illinois, and you didn't place, you said.
That's correct. But
you were in that atmosphere. But it's like, whoa, that's hard too. You know, and I imagine you've had some moments where you've had to question a few things, but you seem like you're doing well, and here, when you're here and you're doing great work. But I don't know where you want to take this, but I can imagine, not just this, but I mean your whole life. But it sounds like you worked through it too, and I like that.
Hey, yeah.
What a coach is all about, mm-hmm. And that's what a dad's all about. That's what a mom's all about. You know, it's like you got kids, you got teammates, you got people. Got to look out for, and if more you can actually get them on the right track, the more chances they're going to do better. And then how many people are they affected? I mean, right now, just this conversation with me and you can affect a lot of people.
Oh, you betcha.
I mean, we probably want billions, but you know, but that's just our mentality.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And not to go on a tangent here, but we're talking about, you talked about earlier, let's raise good kids and marriage, you know, marriage is work. And the thing that I value about wrestling is just the work ethic is unlike any other sport. And sure, I'm biased, but I'm also telling the truth. You know, doing what you don't want to do is so much more common in wrestling than any other sport. The training, the weight cutting, the battling. And I think if you approach other aspects of your life, marriage mm-hmm. is a big one. That's a wrestling match more than it is a dance, I think.
Yeah, but you said one thing that I'm gonna say something different. You said to me, because you said it and you've had to do it, doing things you didn't want to do. I'm going to tell you, in wrestling, there's not one thing in wrestling that I ever said, never, I don't want to do this. I loved every part of it. I loved the weight loss. I loved the weight cutting. Even if I had to starve a little bit, I loved it. I loved the wrestling practice. Even if the guy was beating the hell out of me, I loved it. But I was fighting back. I wasn't giving in, you know, and I wasn't going to give in and go eat and not make weight. I wasn't going to give in and not let this guy beat me. I'm still fighting back, even though the guy beat the hell out of me. And I'm crying, and I love that, but nobody hardly ever did that to me just because I was good enough not to have that done. But I've had it done a few times, and I can remember. But in the long run, I still needed that. I loved it, even though I hated it at the time. I somehow turned that around. Now, I don't like certain things to happen if you've had them happen before and you can actually go in and prevent them from happening again. And so it's like, once is enough, okay? Mm-hmm. Or I've got to figure this out here. And you figure it out. But don't fall back into that category once you think that you've done something or made progress, because then you're defeating the purpose. You're defeating the purpose of all the work that you're doing, of all the mindset. And then you're going to be as wishy-washy. And so, and again, it's not perfect. So people are going to fall back more than once. I mean, I made a mistake in preparing for my last match in college. And I think I made a mistake going in my 10th year for a national championship from a coaching point of view. I think I made a mistake that year. It's not like you won't fall back into it, but you don't fall back into it the next year, the following year. It takes a while, you know, and you still shouldn't fall back. But, you know, if over time you get a little, like, less are more, maybe more confident than you should be. Mm-hmm. And with that more confidence, that's good, but don't get overconfident. Now, I was probably overconfident.
Right.
Because there were things I could have been cleaning up going for that 10 championship. And I said, well, it's working. I don't have to clean it up. You got to clean it up.
Fairbury Furniture is Central Illinois' premier furniture store. This family-owned business offers a vast selection of premium furniture items from all of your favorite brands, including Sealy, Best Home Furnishings, Leather Italia, Tempur-Pedic, and Ashley, just to name a few. And right next door to their gorgeous 7,000-square-foot furniture showroom, you will find the Fairbury Furniture Mattress Store, home to all of the latest and greatest mattresses in any and all sizes. Also inside Fairbury Furniture is the popular WC Market, a beloved shop that offers an ever-changing selection of unique gifts and fashionable home decor. So make your home interior beautiful, comfortable, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
When I look back at the history of Dan Gable, I look at your YouTube videos, there seems to be two versions of you, and it's almost confusing because they so sharply contrast one another. There's this this younger Gable who was, you could almost say, antisocial, shy, potentially awkward, right? And now you look at this guy, and he's a public speaker extraordinaire, just oozing with intensity and this confidence and this knowledge. You can speak with the best of them. When did that change happen, and how did it happen? Why? Who contributed? Where is this transition?
It started right from the beginning. Dea came out of the womb. You know, I mean, I tell this story, but it's not totally true, but it reflects truthness that when I came home from the hospital, I was in my crib and I was crying and my mom had put me to bed and I was on my back. And when she came in to get me, when I was crying, I was on my belly. And so, you know, it's like, I don't know 100% that's true because I don't remember it. But my mom told me that. So it's true. And if it's not true, it came from my mom, so it's true.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? For me, seeing my wrestling career, you don't want to be on your back. And so why wouldn't I get off my back? So I'm going to believe her. And it's a good thing to believe. It's not, even if it's not the truth, it's a good thing to believe.
Well, what's this have to do with your public speaking? I'm confused.
Well,
you said it all started there. Then you told me the story about you getting off your back as a baby. But how about the speaking?
You don't think you say that to people in public speaking?
No, I mean,
you tell people that story.
Right.
And they like to hear that. That's important to them. Because people hire you in public speaking because they want to leave with something. They're going to remember that story. And there's some good vibes with that story. It's like the Heart of a Champion book. There's some great vibes from that book. And you can apply, I applied them. So when my mom told me that I got off my back, when she came in there, when I was, I was crying in the middle of the night, I believed it. And because I believed it, it made me a little stronger. And if I got on my back in a match, I'd get off my back.
You know, I'm just curious. Do you ever stretch a story to one of your athletes to get what you needed out of them?
Stretch it? Yeah. Hell yeah.
Can you give an example? Because, man, the things you got out of your athletes are just otherworldly. I mean, I've watched videos on YouTube where you do a public clinic for these guys, and you say, all right, let's hit 50 of these, and they're crying through it. And then you say something like, all right, 50 more. And then, you know, they hit 10 or so, and then you say, all right, stop. And they don't stop, and they're just dying. You said, hey, what are you doing? I said you could stop, and they keep going. What's the secret sauce? Maybe what's an example of a story that you stretched?
Well, you're not going to know whether I stretched it or not when I get done.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to tell you whether it's true or not. But there is a story out there about the University of Iowa losing, going for their 9th championship. And we were at Iowa State in a dual meet. And it was like 2 or 3 weeks before the Big Tens. So it's at the end of the season. And we're going to host the NCAAs in 1986. And we get beat at Iowa State. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And when we got beat in 86, we had a bus ride over and we had a bus ride back. Now, the word is that 9 miles before we got back home, that I didn't let them eat after the match. Mm-hmm. And then we drove in the bus until 9 miles from University of Iowa. And they stopped the bus. And I made them run home. That's the word on the street. Mm-hmm. 9 miles. Because we had won 9 championships in a row and we're going for 10. So I should have probably had them run 10. But 9 was what we had accomplished so far. And then I told them that I'd meet them. Well, they didn't really know. I'd stopped the bus. I didn't tell them what they were doing. Actually, I stopped it in a place where they thought they were going to eat. So when they got off the bus, I said, guys, I'll see you back at the wrestling room, and I'll be there. I'd run with you, but I want to get back, and I'm going to set the wrestling room, because when you get there, you're going to have a few practice, and we're going to do a little. We're going to finish up with some drills. And so we got back there, and the team took a while, 9 miles. But then we had a little short practice, and then a month later, we had 5 national champions and 6 guys in the finals, and we dominated in the national title, win a team championship. Now, am I going to tell you that's a true story or no? I'm going to tell you this. It might be true. But I sometimes, as I get older, I feel a little like, do I really want to have people think I'm really a brute or a guy that would really just do something like that? Or is it the fact that I do know that when they hit the room, I worked them out really hard that, you know, for a half hour before I let them go home. And this is 12:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I do know that true or not true, the wrestling part was for sure true. But whether them 9 miles were true or not, I can't remember exactly, but I think they're true. But I don't want to, you know, take away something. But I do know that the next year the NCAA had rules. You can't work out after a match with a coach and a team practice. And so that was the best rule that could ever happen. You know why? Because now the athletes became more independent and realized what they should do instead of having to do. Because the coach didn't have to make them. So the next year, if that would have been a year earlier, and they would have known that they would have had to run those 9 miles, and then they would have known by themselves and after, you know, and stuff like that, instead of me making them. So it helped them actually by making a rule, because the rule was put there because the coaches said, well, we don't want Gable doing this because that's, we don't want to do that. Right. So we're taking in, you know, less work. But with all that information out there, whether it's true or false, I didn't care if the rule came in effect or not, because I knew that the attitude of my athletes would be better knowing that they made a rule because of them. And now they know that they have to do this stuff on their own, just like when they're wrestling. I'm not out there when they're wrestling. So whether I show up at practice or not, guys, when it comes 3:30, 4 o'clock, whatever time your practice starts. Don't wait for the coach. Get up, start doing what you're doing. That's not your first practice. You've done a lot of practice, especially at this high level. And so you're an independent guy. But yeah, when the coach walks in, if he's late, better be ready for some dependence, because he's going to be doing some yelling. And he's going to be screaming, and probably not so much then, but at the end of practice, when you're really thinking you're done, and you're not done, And it's only because the coach is keeping you going more, because you've pushed yourself to that level, and now you can still get the coach to get more out of you. So that's kind of what. So, you know, it's things have changed a little bit, but the philosophies don't change for the champions. The champions are, there's reasons they're champions.
Did you make Brock, or not Brock, Brad Smith truly run 10 miles every week during
15.
His... No, stop.
I would only tell the 10. So I think I made him go 15. But he only did it for 4 weeks. And it was after practice, though.
That's more than a half marathon, and it's winter in Iowa.
Hey, one time they told me that, you know, they had a half marathon, that's just 13 miles, 13.1. And they said, you want to run it? I don't care. So I went out and ran it, and that was nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. You know, it was in bad weather, too. But you know what? It was hard for about the 6 miles, and then after that, it was like nothing. I could have went the other 13 easy because I was numb or something. There was something. You get to a point where you can just go, and that's where you want your athletes. Get to a point where they no longer feel the hard part of it, of training, that it's all the same. It's easy.
The amazing part of your book, A Wrestling Life, maybe part two, A Wrestling Life 2, is the stories like Brad Smith's. You look at those stories, and there's so many stories like that in these books and just that you hear on the internet, and then they always just about end the same. And it must have worked because he went on to be a national champion or two-time national champion.
One-time national champ.
Well, for Brad, yeah. But then
there was something missing in his life, though, but it takes thinking. I mean, I don't know why I took to my fourth year with him, because he was good enough to probably almost win it at the beginning, but it was the beginning of my coaching. And so, yeah, I'd been a coach because I was a captain, but never really a coach full time, because I had to work on my own athletic skills. So to me, it just took me a little while to figure out that what this guy needs. But once you got into coaching, you pretty much saw it every and jumped on the chance quicker. Mm-hmm. But you did get a little lazy with doing that when you become real successful. Right. And that's why I've been kicked in the butt at a time when you thought you was going to break all time, the all-time record.
Win the 10th national title in a row.
I mean, who would have thought, you know, we weren't going to win? Well, Jim Gibbons thought, I'm going to be Gable this year, you know, and Larry Owings thought, I'm going to be Gable this year. Well, Gable's got to be thinking about Larry Owings. There's somebody out there going to beat me. I got to be thinking about Jim Gibbons. There is a coach out there that actually will stand up and take the challenge. In fact, overdo the challenge and beat the Hawkeyes. So, you know, you got to think that way. And that's why when the Russians gave me that notice, man, that helped.
Right.
Yeah, because they could have snuck up on me and may have got to me mentally. That's the only way they're going to beat you, probably mentally.
Speaking of stretching the truth, you know, are these stories true? Barry Davis has one of the coolest stories I've ever heard. You know, the night before the Big Tens, he was cutting a lot of weight. Is that story true? Is that one of those ones? I feel like it's true because Barry
this
tells
it. This isn't even a controversy. You know, like I told you the one before. Is it true? Is it not true? But this is absolutely true. And it took a stroke of luck. But you know what? I don't believe in luck. I believe in being prepared. And when you're prepared, luck is what you get. You happen to get lucky. So I happen to get lucky with a few times. I mean, how lucky can you be? You don't know where he's at. And the team is already going, and you have to be at a certain place at a certain time, and you only got an hour.
Wait a minute here. So, I mean, tell the story just briefly. So Barry Davis was I believe he was a returning national champion in the 80s.
He was I think he got fifth as a freshman.
Oh, okay. And this is his sophomore year.
Yeah.
And it was the night before the Big Tens. He was the number one seed in that tournament.
I think he was probably the number one seed in the United States, you know, but he was a sophomore. And so we met in the locker room to go. We're going to catch a quick ride to the airport, and we're flying to Chicago, and then we're flying from Chicago to Detroit, I believe. I think we're going to Ann Arbor for the Big Ten Championships. And this is, for some reason, I don't know why I would do this either. I would never do this now. I was flying in the same day that we're weighing in. And you got to weigh in the night before, though, I believe. I believe you got to weigh in the night before. That's possible. And so that's maybe why. But I was still not thinking straight, because what happens if you don't make weigh-ins? Well, you don't get to wrestle.
Yeah, you missed the last call.
Yeah. So I think I was getting there plenty of early. You know, that's why we were leaving on early flight. And what happened was, when we came to that early flight, well, in the locker room, we met in the locker room, there was a note on my locker said, "Coach Barry here, I'm not going to travel with the team. I'm not going to wrestle in the Big Tens." He says, "Don't look for me. You won't find me." And, you know, he that's fine. He can say that. "Don't look for me. You won't find me." But I'm not a quitter, you know.
And why do you leave this note? Why didn't he want to go?
Well, he didn't want to make weight, and which I didn't understand at the time, that he wasn't, you know, that he was struggling with it a little bit, because he's making it, you know, we're making it all year. But I didn't realize that he thought he could skip the Big Tens and go to the NCAAs. Well, you used to be able to do that back when I wrestled.
Really? He didn't know.
No,
that
I think the rule changed.
Disqualified.
Yeah, I think the rule changed a few years in there, where he just wasn't up to par. And that's my fault, you know, making the kids realize, you know, this is a mandatory sectionals districts before you get to your states. Uh-huh. Because when I went to college, I didn't have to go to the Big Eights to be able to go to the nationals. It was just up to whoever wanted to go to the nationals got to go. So, you know, you didn't have to qualify at that time. So at this time, you know, it was one of these time changes, and it was like, if you want to go, your school will support you and send you can go. So he was going to skip and go to the national tournament, but he didn't know that he was going to be disqualified, and we weren't going to be able to send anybody, because we didn't have anybody at the weight class. So I sent the team on right to the airport. They flew to Ann Arbor, and they were ahead of time, and I went to work, and I used Sherlock Holmes' theory. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, detective.
I think it's called deductive reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you have all these things in front of you. How do you get them down to one? And then that's the guilty person, or that's the answer. And so the first thing I did was I got lucky a little bit, because I went for the night janitor that was going to leave. He was there from like midnight till 10 o'clock or something like that. And I found the midnight janitor and said, "Did you see anybody in our locker room?" Because they tour around. He says, "You know, I did see a wrestler there last night about 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I go, "Whoa, must have been Barry." And I probably asked him if it was Barry, and I don't know if he knew him or didn't know him. But that gave me a lead right away that he had been over here, and that he had been probably trying to get down to weight or something. And so then I go to my office, and the team leaves, and I get the rest. I call, the first thing I do is call for help. So if there was 15 other wrestlers on my team, or 20 or whatever they were, I call them and let them know and ask them if they knew anything about Barry. But would you call these certain people and look, see what you can find out? And they go, you know, I told them the story, he's missing. They wrote me a note. So I just didn't have me doing the work. I went from one person to probably 20 people doing the work. And I got a lead from the janitor. Then all of a sudden, one of these guys, a phone call came in to me. He says, "Yeah, we got a lead on him. And he was with this person somewhere. And this person lives in this part of town We don't know exactly where it is, but I got in my car and I went to that part of town. In that part of town, there was a Hy-Vee store. And in a Hy-Vee store, why'd I go in a Hy-Vee store? Because there was, I needed a phone book to look up an address in that part of the town, because I didn't know exactly where, so I could look up the person's name and address. And so when I was in this payphone book looking inside the Hy-Vee, I just happened to look to my left and there's somebody checking out of the, you know, this is like 8 o'clock in the morning, 8:30, because I think our flight was like 7 o'clock that morning. And I only had a short period of time to do all this. And so it was Barry Davis. This is like 4 or 5 miles from campus, extreme end of we're on the east end of town, and he's in a Hy-Vee, and he has a sack of groceries. He doesn't live anywhere out there. But it was the lead that I got that he was with somebody the night before a little bit, and they lived in that area, but I didn't know exactly where. So I immediately walked up to him, and he turned, he saw me, he dropped that bag, and all these, like these donuts rolled out on the floor. And he goes, "Coach, I haven't eaten anything yet." And he goes, "I can't believe you found me, you know." And I says, "Well, don't underestimate me." But anyway, I says, "Well, I don't know what," I said, "Barry, do you want to wrestle?"
Well, you just, he ran away and you found him miles from campus by some crazy chance. You knew he didn't want to wrestle, right? But
no.
Anyway.
That was the question.
Okay.
Do you think he was going to say no to me? I mean, I don't know, but if he would have said, "No, I don't want to wrestle," that would have been it. He goes, "Yes, I want to wrestle. I'm overweight. And I needed some support," he said last night. "And I tried to do this by myself. And if I would have probably went with a teammate, I'd have been fine, but I didn't. And now that you're here right beside me, I want to wrestle." I says, "Well, how much are you overweight?" He says, "Oh, about 6 pounds. I says, "Whoa.
133 pounder? What was he?
118.
118.
I think that was the weight, yeah. So he probably weighed 124. So I said, "Well, I know the flights. I've already got somebody got me the flights. We can get a flight to Ann Arbor. We can get there probably, if everything's on time, and if we get there, if we can get a, you know, we get a car and all that, and we have somebody pick us up and drive us, we had quite a little bit of a drive between, you know, where we had to go to." I says, "We could maybe make it.
For weigh-ins."
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think you have probably a half hour. Maybe he even had an hour. He had maybe 6 to 7 or something. So I said, he goes, but I got to lose weight. You know, listen, we got the flight, we got 2-hour layover in Chicago. There's a hotel in Chicago airport. We can, and there's a health club in that hotel. We'll go work out.
2 hours, he can lose 6 pounds.
Well, it didn't take 2 hours. So we went to happened to be on time. We got there. We went to this hotel. We went up there. And we checked into this workout facility. They had a sauna, but, you know, that wasn't going to do it. You can't lose 6 pounds in a sauna. And so I said, "Let's get your clothes on." And so we had the clothes. We had the gym bags each, probably. Put our clothes on. And he probably put a couple layers on. And it was a high-rise hotel. And so what I did was I made him go in front of me. We ran the stairs. He went like, it's probably 12 flights at least, maybe 15 even. And so I made him run, probably went 15 up. And I was behind him because I wasn't going to run ahead of him because...
Take off, right?
Yeah. So I'm following him and I'm staying with him. We go all the way up. By the time we go all the way up, he's sweating. That's 15 flights or so. So we walk down and we get down and we go one more time. 15 flights. And then we go down, and that was, you know, we got to, you know, we're on his time schedule here. And so we went back into that room, and I said, you want to get in the sauna for a little bit? I don't want to get in the sauna, he said. I said, get in the sauna. So he got in there, but he only lasted 1 minute in the sauna. So I did tell him, come on, let's go, get out, because I could tell he wasn't going to last. And it wasn't, you don't want to do something that's going to set him off. And I said, we got to go. So he took his sweats off. He had weighed himself. They had a scale there, and the scale said he was 6 over. And when he started, and we only went about 50 minutes, and he got on the scale. He was right. He was a quarter over. Mm. And I said, we're not going to weigh in yet for, you know, we got an hour flight, and then you're going to, we got to get there. We got about 3 hours yet. So, you know, you'll drift this. So he didn't have anything. He stayed on the plane, and we drove him. We got there about 20 minutes to go before the ending time. Got on the scale, was about a half under. Wrestling the Big Tens, won the Big Tens. 2 weeks later, we go to the national tournament. And I said, Barry, I got to keep an eye on you, you know, a little bit. And he goes, yeah, I know, coach. But he said, I'll be all right. I said, Barry, do you want to sleep in my room with me at the Nationals? And he says, no. And so me and my wife had a room, but we had a room with two double beds. So we're in bed that night, and there's a knock on the door. And this is Wednesday night, and I open the door, and it's Barry Davis. He says, coach, can I sleep with you guys?
Because he knew that he couldn't trust himself, kind of thing.
So he stayed in that bed, and he got up the next day. He weighed in. He won the first day twice. And the second day he won twice. Third day he was in the finals. He was a national champ. That was his first national title. And he had to beat Kevin Darkus, who was a tough dude from Iowa State. And that's quite a story.
Oh, quite a story. That's a timeless tale right there. And I've heard people say that he was like breathing through the crack in the sauna, and you said, hey, every pound you lose, I'll give you a shot.
That's Rick Sanders.
That's Rick Sanders.
It wasn't me either. It was another coach.
Oh, my goodness.
He was going to, and he liked his whiskey, and so they gave him some whiskey, and he ended up winning a world championship, Rick Sanders.
I got to ask here, you push these guys and they do amazing things for you. And even Barry Davis has retold that story and said, you know, he had ran away and looked for jelly filled donuts, he said, at the store, and they didn't have any jelly filled donuts, but donuts he definitely got. And he said, you know, the last thing he wanted to do is wrestle and cut that weight. But all of a sudden he said, he saw you, something about you, Dan Gable. He said, Barry, what are you doing? He said, I didn't eat anything. And
well, then just get him to run that stairs. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, then you said, Barry, what do you want to do? You want to wrestle? And he said, yes. And then he said in this interview, he said, did I just tell the guy yes? He said, that's the thing about Dan Gable. You can't tell the guy no. You can't tell the guy no. And that's incredible. Why couldn't guys tell you no?
Well, you know, that's a great comment, because that shows that you've done a lot to help that kid. You've done so much that he's witnessed, not only him with the team. There's more good than bad. There's good times. There might be some bad times, but I'm going to tell you, the respect that you get when you go that route is going to come through when you have incidences like that more than not. It's not perfect. You know, it's not perfect, but it definitely gives you that edge to be able to get what you want.
Did guys ever snap on you when you tried to push them that hard?
Whatever.
What's maybe an example? Like, I'm surprised guys didn't swing at you. Did that
close,
happen?
Oh, close.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, maybe? Well, I took a couple times. Well, heavyweight, John Ostendorf, who's an All-American, national Greco-Roman champion later on, was in a practice room, and I got on his butt, and I was... And he actually brought up a hand to hit me, but he didn't. But I knew, I just had a feeling he wasn't going to. If he would have, I probably wouldn't be here today. Even though he probably couldn't beat me in a wrestle match, he could have probably hit me hard enough that would have probably killed me. But, you know, because I didn't even put my arms up to protect myself. That's what I was just looking at him, you know. But he had this look that was dangerous.
I'd step away from swinging at you.
But he came through too, you know, and it took a lot of stuff like that with him to come through. So, you know, I can remember a little guy named Mark Trezino when I was on his butt one time in practice, and he pushed me, and I fell over about 3 airdynes. You know, because he pushed me hard, and I hit one airdyne, that hit another airdyne, but I bounced right up. You know, there's no hurt. You know, maybe when I went home, I probably had some aches and pains, you know, on my back or my legs and stuff. But you know, I was pushing him.
How were you pushing him that made him do that?
He needed something, and he wasn't going to get it without that push for him to be successful. You know, in his life, you know, beyond wrestling, you know, it's just something that, you know, it's like, okay, I'm not going to do that. And it's something that you really should do. And it's something that you should fulfill. It's your obligation, but you're not going to do it. You know, well, you got to know what's important and what's not. And if it's not important, then don't worry about it. Don't threaten them. You know, don't be right there. You know, just say, hey, don't do it. You know, and even there might be a kid, you might have to say that to get him to do it. Because he might be just the opposite of this, what I'm trying to do. And that's why you got to know your kids, know your people. You got to know, you know, what makes things work. I mean, it's not just in the wrestling room. It's in the office. It's in the factories. It's in the home at home. I mean, right now, you see this table here? Mm-hmm. I tipped this whole table over full of food before. Not here, at another house. Because my wife said something to me that really pissed me off.
I'm curious.
Upset me. I don't even remember exactly what it was. But it was something like what the AD told me one time. He said, you don't need this kid. You can still win the national championships. And I told the AD that, yeah, you're right. But this kid needs wrestling for his life, you know? And so it's always like when I was home and I tipped over, all the kids were there and all the food was there. It broke every dish probably. But it's like, I'm not proud of that. But I lost my cool because it was like this kid, you don't realize how much I have into this kid. And this the difference going to be whether he's going to be able to make it in this life. You know, that's what it's about, you know? And so it wasn't, I mean, we're talking about a kid named Rico Ciparelli, for an example. And that's a long time ago, 1987 national champion, the year we lost the NCAAs. We lost to Iowa State. He won his match in the finals. But I'm going to tell you right now, he wouldn't have won that match. It was a tough-ass match. And he wouldn't have won if he hadn't had a coach stand beside him in certain situations. And if I didn't keep Brad Penrith on the team because the athletic director wanted him off the team, and if I hadn't told the AD, who was an understanding AD, because he realized that, well, this is the only way that he'll live his life well, or if it's the fact that what can I do to keep him on the team? You tell me, and I'll see if I can get it done. And that's what he did. He told me he had to straighten his life out in this area, and we did. We straightened it out for him. We had to take him, go for help, but we did, and it worked. But it's like if you care for people, I mean, you could say, well, you just needed that no, I didn't. You know, I could have won that year. We ended up winning, you know, by a long ways. I probably didn't know it at that time. And it's probably my, you know, I'm looking out for a lot of different things. But you know, when I look and see the difference it has made in people's lives, most of them have turned out really good. And if that one moment would have, that was a huge moment, I mean, you can point to that direction and say, you know, that's what made this kid, he's going to do the same thing for other people. I mean, the guy's got a great wife, he's got great kids. I mean, I love it. I mean, a kid that you wouldn't think would have gave a, he'd have been divorced, married, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Wow. Wow. All because you cared about him as much as you did.
Yeah, but it didn't start with me. It started with my mom and dad. It started with my coaches. It started with my teachers, you know, and that's what this life's all about. I mean, when I went in the classroom, when I was in school, I didn't have all this controversy. In fact, you know, there was rumors about things, and the teachers would call me in and say, there's this rumor about it. Is it true or not? No, that's not true. And they believe me, which it wasn't. It wasn't true. But you know, it's like my math teacher in eighth grade, you know, set me on the right avenue for getting good grades. But, you know, it was like he didn't try to influence me. He just tried to teach me good math. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Because I listened, I got good grade. And that good grade is what made the difference in me being a good student from then on. Because I didn't know grades were meant anything. I had no idea that my arm being raised in a wrestling match was the same as getting an A on a test. I didn't know that because I never got an A on a test. My arm got raised a lot. But, you know, so, you know, it's just things in life to feel good that are good.
Man, the value of, you said it yourself and it got me fired up. I just had to laugh like, wow. This is incredible what you're saying. You're saying it didn't start with you. You saving these, I mean, really, I'll say something. But so, first of all, you might have saved some kids' lives and you didn't even know it. You really might have saved some of the wrestlers' lives because you know that they were on the brink of just kind of losing it mentally. You know?
I know that two of them told me they were going to end their life.
You're kidding me.
Yeah,
two of your athletes.
Two of my athletes had told me that.
And they say that you kind of saved them.
Yeah.
How? Just showing that you cared, or what was it that you did?
Well, yeah, obviously that's part of it, but how did I know about it? How did I know? That's communication. You go back to that communication. My wife thinks that I talk too much when it comes to me, and sometimes don't beat this thing. This is, you know, this is okay. But, you know, and she's right at times, but that's the way we work. We communicate to each other. And when we all get done, she's looking at me. Yeah. When we all get done, it's like, it's okay to talk. It's just like sometimes I beat a dead issue, you know? And to me, there's a reason I'm doing this, because I needed to. Mm-hmm. And I needed to do it to somebody. And she just so happens to be my teammate here,
right?
And that's who I talk to him. But because of her going home to somebody, you know, good things happen to people. And same way with like my life now. I mean, with 13 grandkids, I don't think I spend that I spend some quality time with them. Like I told you, did I tell you I had a moment?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. When you were holding your daughter's Mac,
my son,
right? That was his name,
Mac. Yeah. I mean, son, grandson. But, you know, it's like she's had all these moments, Kathy, with these grandkids, way more than me. And she understands that. But it's not like I don't do a part. I have a very, very important part. And I maybe not have understood it at the beginning of my life, I mean, my marriage and stuff like that, as much as I could have, because I could have cut corners back then that wouldn't have made the difference with my athletes, but would have made a difference with my family a little bit. So, but you learn. And again, if you make that same mistake, then you're a fool, unless that's what you want. But you will make a similar mistake over time, chances are. But because you've been there before, you'll catch it, and it won't go to the degree it went before. And so that's what the big deal is. And that's what longevity means.
Right.
And that's what life's all about. And that's why we in America should get along.
And you talk about the value of communication. I stress it all the time. It's a vision I have for this show. If I really believe, you know, in Congress, if we could have the Republicans and the Democrats sit down like you and I are and talk for 2 hours on a podcast and, you know, just hash things out, the solution, the best possible solution that you could both agree on, it exists, right? It's there. And it takes you sorting out, having a battle of words and an exchange of ideas. You can find that thing that's going to lead the country to a much better place, but it takes communicating. You got to talk, man.
Yeah, I think that both sides are maybe thinking closer than they think they're apart. They just don't understand it. And with that communication, there would be more understanding, because everybody has their own way of getting there. And my way of getting there, you know, happens to be through my whole life, what I've learned. And my way of getting there is through like inspiration and goal setting and not just giving me something, making me work for it. And I think that there's some common denominators there that we haven't looked at. And because there is so many people that are sitting and that are needing something. And instead of just giving it and not knowing how to handle it, if they were much more prepared to handle a gift, they'd be a lot better off. And then they would learn their own way to be able to survive well. And I think that's really what's missing. It's going to take one-on-one. It's not going to take two-on-two, five-on-two.
Some panel discussion that lasts 5 minutes on the news, you know? Yeah, it's got to be this one-on-one, this in-depth, personal.
Yeah, and it takes, and so that makes it more difficult, because everybody wants to solve it right now. Let's solve it right now. It's not going to get solved right now. It's just like I can't be a great wrestler just because I want to be a great wrestler.
Right. It's an uphill battle. It's a fight. It's a struggle.
Yeah, but you got to love it too, remember?
You got to love it. That's the most beautiful part. Like,
yeah, you got to love people.
Yep.
I mean, even though I didn't like you, not you, but you know, if I get into this discussion, down deep, you got to have some love for people.
Just for, humans, I mean, it's just in
like,
general.
How could I like the guy that killed I don't like him, that killed my sister, but it's like, I forgave him, you know?
There's something about having an appreciation for every human being, and I think you can't really talk about that too much without getting into faith a little bit. You know, each person's infinitely valuable in the eyes of God, and they're created, and it's like, for that reason, I gotta respect you.
Yeah,
you know?
That's what...
I gotta love
you. Part of the issue right there, because they may not have much faith in that area or that way of life. So that's a good one. And that's why, you know, when the Petersons ran into me, I gave them a lot, because they give me a lot of credit, but they gave me a lot too, because they were preaching something that I probably didn't preach as much as, I mean, it's right now on my phone right now. Ben Peterson is on there giving me a scripture right now. Okay, so that's all Ben Peterson right here. Them are all Bible verses right there. Or
wow,
his version of a Bible verse. He brings wrestling into this. Ben Peterson, look at this.
What a guy.
Every day. I get one every day. I get one every day now. But it's not just something I can't understand. He incorporates the sport of wrestling into this. And so I get it.
I mean, the word Israel means to wrestle with God.
He's doing a lot for me.
Yeah.
Bob Richards did a lot for me. But, you know, that's obviously he appreciates me, you know.
I just got a couple more questions here for you because we're winding down. I know you got the chief of police or something coming to meet with you here in a few minutes, but I wanted to ask you here. So this happened in my hometown of Normal, Illinois, and I wanted to see if you remember it. But on April 15th, 1973, a high school wrestling coach named George Girardi organized a benefit for a wrestler of his named Les Arms. And Les had developed a brain tumor, and the prognosis didn't look good, and the event was supposed to be held at his old high school, University High in Normal. But the event quickly grew among Central Illinois wrestlers and was moved to Horton Fieldhouse at ISU, Illinois State University. The benefit was soon after the 72 Munich Olympics.
I went there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and legends like Wayne Wells, gold medalist, Ben Peterson, gold medalist, John Peterson, gold medalist, would go on to be a gold medalist, and Chris Taylor, bronze medalist, and you, a gold medalist, you were all at this place for this event, for this young man, and you even wrestled one of the ISU wrestlers, Doug Wilson. First of all, do you remember this event?
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember it really like it was yesterday, but, right, okay. But it's like it was a long time ago. And I believe Les Arms, I can't remember exactly what you said happened to him.
He had a brain tumor.
Yeah, and I think he lived for quite a while.
He's still alive.
Is he still alive?
I believe he's still alive.
Wow.
That's incredible. And
yeah, but I remember that. Was he? He was a Northern Illinois kid. Where did you say he wrestled for?
He wrestled in, well, he came from Normal, Illinois, Normal? So my hometown, but then I think he wrestled at Oklahoma State,
That's
actually.
What I thought.
Right.
And that was one reason maybe to keep me away. Mm-hmm. But when things like that happens, we come together. The Smith family, John Smith, Leroy Smith, all the girls, the mom and dad, and even a lot of them are, the mom and dad are, blah, blah, the dad that passed not too long ago. We got into a big issue one time. It was when I was an Olympic coach, and there's a lot of hard feelings about some of the best wrestling people in the United States of America that became the best wrestling people in the world at the Olympic Games. And there was issues for quite a while. But we managed to get together and settle those issues. And because of that, it made for much more great improvement in our sport when you had two of the greatest minds, Smith family, Gable family, working together a little bit. I work for, for Leroy Smith, right now with the museum. But you look at things, and if they were bad, you can't keep those going bad, and you turn them around some way. And it took me and John Smith actually coaching together in the year 2000, I believe at the Australian Olympics. And we worked together for, 6-8 week period and became pretty good friends. At one time, we weren't pretty good friends.
Right.
And because we were able to work together and we found out that we're good people, it's helped the sport and it's helped a lot of people. It's helped a lot of people not have to worry about the stress of somebody not liking you. Just especially at that high level. And so the Smith family, the Gable family, hey, I think we're pretty good. We're pretty good. And I think that helps our sport of wrestling unbelievably.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. And Dan, again, for the sake of time, I could talk to you for hours. I would absolutely love it too. Well, but hey, last question here, and it's kind of a big one. We're both men of faith here, and at the end, when we hang up our shoes in the wrestling match that is life, and we get more than just our hand raised, I'm talking getting your soul raised, what do you want to be able to look back on your life and say that you did?
If I had my way, which it's not going to happen easily, I'm going to be able to actually have something bigger than I've ever had in my life to be able to make even that much more of a difference. I mean, you're here today because you looked up to me and you liked what took place in my life, but to even go beyond a wrestler, you know, to be able to go in the household of almost every household of people across the world, you know, if you have that chance, that would probably be what I would want. And it's great for the sport, but it's also for a way of life that is much better than there's ever been. I'm not saying it hasn't been okay, but there's always some disruption somewhere. I mean, right now it's like, whether it's again, you talked a lot about faith, but you know, it's like what people believe in, you know, and it's, and that's a, you know, that's some kind of hit heads, and that's strong. That's, you know, forever. So, you know, it's like, if you can get people to just work together a little bit more than they are and have more feelings for others and don't have this hatred. I mean, it's like right now, it's like if you look and see what Russia's going on, and if you see what, you know, in Belarus, and if you look a lot of times with Iran, if you look with North Korea, look with China. I mean, that's a big hunk of countries. I mean, they're big. I mean, Russia's big. I probably never looked at Russia on the map until recently. And if I'd have looked at them back when I was wrestling, I might have got scared. They're big.
Yeah, they're big.
They're big. So, if that part of the world and the rest of the world, those countries can somehow manage a better way than wanting to rule, I'd love to be hey, this guy led this revolution to do this.
You'd like to contribute to that
vision. I'm hoping that I already do a little bit, but a lot actually, but there's a lot more yet. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like a battle, a good wrestle match.
That's right. That's right. And you know what you do after a good wrestle match? You shake hands.
And you recover.
And you recover.
And that's why you have that beer back there. But you don't drink a lot of beer. Even though I think you drank one. I put one in the freezer, and I probably, it's frozen now, so I probably forgot to give it to you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Man. Well, Dan, I mean, I know you got to get going and doing some things, but I just can't tell you how much I appreciate your time today. They say never meet your heroes because they'll let you down. Quite the contrary. Oh, my gosh, man. It's been I've had a great time talking to you, and you're an inspiration to so many. You've had many positive impacts on people like me, and I'm just honored to be one of those many who actually gets to meet you and talk to you one-on-one like this. So it's truly an honor, and thank you, Dan Gable, for coming on to the Paul Garcia Show.
Hey, when you brought your dad with you, that knew I was impressed, you know, because a lot of people forget about that. Don't ever forget about that.
Thank you, Dan Gable. Yeah. You're the man.
Yeah, thank you.